It's hour number two of the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and Ryan Walters with us in studio. We've got quite a group of experts here. We're going to be tackling some of the questions that you folks have sent us through the email. And by the way, if you want to know how you can get your question handled, and by the way, they're dealt with all throughout the week, simply go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, and on the Contact Us button, click that. And then you can put in your name and your email address and your phone number, and then put a question, whatever the question may be, and one of our guys is going to handle it during the week. But today what we thought we'd do is see if we can bring some of those questions back around and deal with them on the air here as well.
So, I invited Ryan Walter to come to the IT and the D segment so he could see what that radio show looked like, and it's an internet-only radio show. We invited him here not only to critique that, but also to show him what a real radio show looks like. But, Ryan, you and I work together, you are the IT risk officer at Flagstar.
Yes.
IT risk officers haven't been around all that long, have they? I mean, talk to us a little bit about what it's like, and maybe people out there that want to get into being an IT risk officer, what do they have to pay attention to?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, you have IT and you have security and then you have risk. Really, risk is it's kind of the framework to develop some operational controls around keeping information secure, keeping operations open. So, it's a fun, I mean, it's kind of fun. It's not the most exciting thing in the world.
Wait a minute.
Here.
You have to be.
Listen, it warms my heart to know that the bank is very concerned about that kind of thing, Cal.
Okay, so I'm a young kid. I'm just getting out of high school. I'm getting ready to go to college.
Yes.
What do I study to become a risk officer?
You know, actually, I started in just IT. I was crawling under computers, fixing workstations. I was a network administrator, and then I started getting into security, and then I found that I liked reading the guidance online, the regulations, the frameworks. I'm kind of a rare breed. So, you know, I'd recommend, I teach classes at Walsh. There's a couple Walsh classes related to governance, risk, and compliance, and you can take one of those classes or look at the curriculum and see if it interests you.
Do you have to be an auditor?
No, not really. I mean, it's good to know to have an auditing background. It's actually more beneficial to have a security background so you understand like the controls and what you need to secure.
Being hugely important.
Imagine. You also should have some regulatory background a lot. I mean, you have to really understand regulations, the frameworks. I'd recommend if somebody that's starting off, just pick up a book on governance, risk, and compliance and see if it interests you. If it puts you to sleep in the first 10 pages, then you know it's not right for you. So,
however, if you want to increase your salary, these are good books to read, right?
It's a coming
area, and there's not enough people.
Yeah,
there's not enough people doing these jobs.
There's the pendulum swing, right? I mean, there really is this, with Sarbanes-Oxley and the Dodd-Frank and a lot of the regulations that have came in, the pendulum has swung both ways. And what we try to do in the risk side is we try to balance the operational and the compliance activities.
Yes, yes. And you don't want to have so many regulations that you've frozen the ability to do any kind of work.
Yep, absolutely. Because you don't want to be the sheriff coming into town saying, we're going to make everything, we're going to comply with everything.
This last year in particular, you know, where you have breaches in security at Target and in so many other places. Wasn't there a massive financial...
Chase had a problem.
Had a problem. I mean, in other words, at the highest levels, you had some incredible security breach. Has this made your job more difficult in that sense?
Actually, it actually makes it easier for me because then you learn from your mistakes, right?
They start throwing money at them. Yeah. We don't want this to happen. Here, take it. Protect us.
I love it.
Well, and now everybody in IT and actually everybody in senior leadership, they're concerned. All of a sudden, they're listening. Okay, let's help us make sure we don't make mistakes, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so is there a difference in risk management and cybersecurity?
Absolutely. Yes, there is. There's cybersecurity handles more of the continuous monitoring, looking at the logs, the malware, et cetera, looking at those types of securing the assets. Risk actually is a layer above that. So we actually we draft up the controls and the guidance to help them build out their programs, their information security programs. So
you look at, if it's risk, you're looking at what might be at risk,
yes,
and therefore needs to be protected.
Yes. So cybersecurity is one piece of that. There's the operational risk pieces. There's the network security pieces of it. We kind of have a level above that, so we kind of drive the framework for all of those.
Gary, I'm wondering, you know, at the recent cybersecurity conference that came up,
that's right,
you were with the business end of the things.
That's
that,
right.
That must be a huge concern as well. Like with our infrastructure, we're concerned, but economically,
yes,
yeah,
if the banks ever got attacked.
Yeah, risk, compliance, and security, right, are really important to just about everybody, but certainly to, you know, where the infrastructure really is critical. And there can be some bad things that can happen if bad guys want to do it, right?
Yep.
And do you have to know things like SCADA? I mean, do you have to be a really kind of a security wonk? You know, it doesn't seem so to be a risk officer.
Yeah, actually, it's more beneficial to be. I'm sure you've heard this when people refer to, there's a certification called Certified Information Security Systems Professional. And, you know, what they claim is that you have to be an inch deep and a mile wide. Mm-hmm. So you really need to be understand right. the lingo. You don't want to go too far in the weeds, but right. you need to understand. But you also need to be on the forefront of the technologies that are changing, such as the cloud. You also need to be aware of the regulations that are changing, such as Dodd-Frank and any Sarbanes-Oxley changes. So,
you know, Cal, you brought the point up before, but what for a young person right now, this is a growing field.
Oh, yeah.
This is a field that's only going to get bigger. So, folks, if you're listening out there, you're moms and dads, grandmas, grandpas, aunts and uncles, and you want to encourage your young folks, this is an area that is open right now.
That's
and
right.
we're crying out for young professionals in these fields.
That's right.
And so,
you don't have to be all that technical. You have to be smart.
Well, yep. Speaking of being smart, we're going to come back in just a minute, and we're going to get Mr. Rudell and Cal Carson and everybody else here involved in answering some of the questions that you posed to us coming up here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. We want to thank, by the way, a variety of people, Mike Parsons, Richard Osinski, who have been behind the glass helping us here in our engineering. We are delighted, guys, with the...
Yeah, it's good to see Mike
all
again.
That you've done here. Thank you so much for all of your help.
And always Rich.
Yep, and always Rich, who's been helping us there. Matter of fact, he's taking the place of Annie Nichols, our lady of the phones.
And that's and quite a place to take.
Yeah, and he's smiling, too. So
he's still smiling. All right, he's still smiling. Feeling good. Well, hey, we got one of our listeners here with us on the line, and his name is Perry. Perry, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you very much. I'm a longtime listener.
Oh, delighted to have you with us. Now, you posed a question to us, which is kind of an interesting one. You keep on getting an error message on your computer, and you wanted to see if this is something that needed to be fixed or really what it was. Now, tell us a little bit about, first of all, about your system. What kind of a system are you running?
I'm running an Inspiron Dell laptop with okay. Windows 7 on it.
With Windows 7 on it, okay. How old is the computer, roughly?
It's probably about a year old.
Oh, only a year old, okay. And you're running with Windows 7 on it, okay. Mm-hmm. And now, when does this particular prompt come up? And I'll read it in just a moment.
Okay, yeah, it comes up randomly, and I did get a copy of it here. I can read it, but it comes up randomly.
Okay.
And I did Google the error,
mm-hmm.
and... Somebody recommended going to the registry, which I did, and I deleted the folder
Oops.
That it's related to, mm-hmm. but it still comes back occasionally, so I'm not sure if it's something embedded there somewhere.
Let me read it to the guys. I work a little at a disadvantage here, but it's C:// program. It's P-R-O
program,
but without the M. Where the
right.
M is, there's a tilde, okay,
right.
and then mm-hmm. 1, and then /common, tilde, 1, / system, / sysmenu.dll. So it's a DLL, Ed, that's coming up here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually if it's in the common folder, that's usually a Microsoft product, or can be a Microsoft product. When does it happen? Are you surfing the internet? Does it happen like immediately after you come into Windows, or it'll happen just sporadically?
Just sporadically. There's no way I can pinpoint when it happens.
But is it when you're online or when you're offline?
Well, I'm always online, so.
And online. So let me ask, what does it actually say? It says this file is there?
The specified module could not be found.
And have you actually gone to that folder? Because I'm assuming you're running a 30 or a 64-bit version of Windows, because you have a programs files, then you have a program files with in parentheses x86 for for legacy Windows program files. So have you actually searched in this folder for that specific file? Or tried to locate it? So, I mean, you'd bring up your My Computer, you'd go to your C drive, and you'd start going to your program files or your program files x86. You might want to look in both. And then what is it? You said common, and then I can't remember what it was after that.
Common, then system, then sysmenu.
Yeah.
Sysmenu.
Yeah, you might want to look and see if you can even see that file there, first of all. And that might give you a clue.
And what was the file again?
Gary, I'm going to pass this over so you can take a look at it. And I say we're at a
because
little bit
I
of it.
I think the file is a Windows file. I think it's needed on your computer.
Right. Well, and this the was thing Gary, is that it's missing. Yeah. And the thing is it's missing.
It says there was a problem starting that file.
And sometimes, well, if the file's there, then what you could do, you could sometimes right mouse click on that individual file and select properties. And Microsoft will bring up a dialog box about the properties of that specific file. And mm-hmm. usually you can look and see who the publisher is. You might find out that it's a Microsoft publisher. It might be Adobe. It could be Apple. I mean, you don't know. But so mm-hmm. it sounds like there's a... It could be that the file's corrupt. It is there and it's corrupt, but it's not coming up.
Now, you said you went into the registry. Excuse me. You went into the registry?
I went into the registry and found a folder that had the... sysmenu folder. Okay. I deleted it.
Okay, so you basically you found a reference in the registry that specified that exact folder, and mm-hmm. you got to be careful. You just really can't delete that unless you're given instructions by Microsoft or who you consider to be a reputable source.
I kind of cringed. Or did you back up your registry before you did that?
I don't remember.
Yeah,
Gal? Well, you know, when you said Ed, you know, a reputable source like Microsoft, on Microsoft's TechNet website, they do have a process for taking care of what appears as the sysmenu.dll file and how to put it back.
Yeah. So, and actually, that's where I was going too. It's right in answers.microsoft.com.
Mm-hmm.
Answers.
And probably what they're going to recommend is that you can either extract it from a DVD or you can run the Microsoft Scan Now or SFC.
Auto run zip is what they there's a whole five-step process.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, along with a download that they can do to put it back.
So let's
let's
give that to Perry again, and specifically Perry to answer your question. Cal, can you tell us where to go for this then?
Well, I just put I just put in sysmenu.dll, and it was the second thing that came up.
Where?
In Google.
Yeah. So and what Gary clicked on is a Microsoft article from answers.microsoft.whatever. And Microsoft's providing you a set of instructions on how to possibly correct the file or put a good copy on there or replace it. And like you can... I'm not sure what their procedure is saying, but you can run a Microsoft provides a utility called System File Check, SFC, and you could do that in the run line. So SFC/scan now, and it'll scan Microsoft Windows folders and other products.
Now, where would you put that again?
In the command line.
In the command line, which is that little box down on the bottom left hand side. I mean, real simplistic on this.
Yes.
The run line. You know what we're talking about, Perry?
Yeah, SFC/scan.
Yes. Scan now.
Scan now.
Oh, scan now.
Yep.
With two N's?
Yeah,
now.
Scan now.
Let's see. Oh, you know, I got to type it. Hold on. Don't you hate that?
So the easiest way, I think, is still answers.microsoft.com. Put in the search line, sysmenu.dll. And it'll come up, and there's five steps. And it'll tell you exactly what to do. You can download right from Microsoft.
Right, they'll have solutions there.
And you found yours with Google, but you know, if he uses Bing.com, it'll be the top one on the list.
Mine was second.
Right? Oh, that's interesting. Google, that's interesting. If you use Bing.
WikiFixes said the exact same thing, but that was first, and I decided to go right to Microsoft.
And for our other listeners, the other thing I would suggest is why did this file either become damaged or what program is trying to start up?
That's the
question. You might want to run your computer and run a disk check, because sometimes files can become corrupted on your computer or damaged. Mm-hmm. So you want to run a Microsoft disk check. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that on a computer?
Is it on the run line?
Well, in the old days, you used to be able to do scan disk, but now you go into My Computer, and then you right mouse click on your C drive, and you select properties.
And then once you select the properties of your C drive, you have a tools tab at the top, and then you'll see a section that basically says, check my disk for errors and fix any errors you run across. You press OK. It's going to basically tell you, we can't run this now because this is your computer Windows thing. Would you like to schedule it for the next time you reboot your computer?
That's what I just said, yeah.
And you select yes, and you're good to go. Now, that's a precautionary thing because we, you know, a computer that's only a year old, I sort of doubt it's the hard drive.
Yeah, and that was part of why we asked you how old the computer is, because sometimes things can be happening because of the age of the hard drive, but not in this case.
Yeah.
Did you answer the question about how whether it was two ends and scan now?
It is two ends. Okay. No, I did not. But
all right. Yeah, it is two ends. And matter of fact, that command you were very talking about on the same page that Gary was talking about as well, further down, it does have information on that tool as well.
So, Perry, we've given you a bunch of things to help you with your particular instance. But in the bigger scheme of things, guys, what we're talking about, too, is when you run into these things that are like .dll, these are important system files.
Dynamic link libraries.
Yeah,
right.
These are important system files. Am I right on this? And then the way to do that would be to go to Microsoft, especially if it's a Windows machine, and you've got a place there where you can ask your questions about that specifically. Perry, thanks so much for being with us.
All right.
Let us know how this works for you, okay?
All right, I'll let you know. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, all right, thank you. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment to answer some more of the questions that you put to us here on the Internet Advisor by going to internetadvisor.net, hitting the Contact Us button, and then sending us your particular concerns so we can help fix them. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. And by the way, we this winter are going to be in the process of redoing a whole lot. Our webpage is going to be redone by the folks at Visual Compass, Vince and the company there. Thank you very much for that. We're in the process of getting that done. And we're hoping to reinstitute things like the forums that we've had up for many years. They had gotten damaged over time. And unfortunately, we were not able to put one up that we could really count on people being able to go back to. And so many people found that valuable. That will be coming, hopefully, in 2015, along with a new look for the website. We're still going to have the same homepage at internetadvisor.net. We're also trying to solve something, and I want to do just a quick minute on this. We've had a handful, maybe a half dozen email from people saying, I tried to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and I'm getting all sorts of weird stuff. Well, there have been problems since about the middle of July with the iTunes feed. Not with our podcast feed. If you go to internetadvisor.net on Sunday nights, you'll always find the new podcast there, and you'll find our whole catalog of podcasts are available when you go to internetadvisor.net. But for some reason, the iTunes feed has been damaged. So what I would suggest you do, if you love our podcast, is simply to go to internetadvisor.net when you're on a Wi-Fi connection where you're not going to be gobbling up your data, and download the podcast. And listen to it that way. I subscribe through an app called Downcast. I think I may have paid like $253 for it, but it is superb in terms of downloading and enjoying podcasts. And I have never had a problem with our podcast there. So there was something in iTunes that happened. We're trying to get it fixed, and hopefully we'll get that done soon.
Of course, you can just go to the website and download the podcast.
That's
as
what
well.
I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. That's the place you will always be able to go. We've checked it out, and the feed is working just fine there. The RSS feed is working there. It's been fixed, and it's working fine. So I just want to say that to people who have been a little frustrated with trying to get our podcast subscribed through iTunes, we are working like mad to get that fixed, and hopefully we'll have that done, along with a lot of other neat stuff coming.
Yeah, we're still trying to get a hold of a rep.
Yeah.
When you call into iTunes. Yeah.
No.
Try to get a live person on the other line.
Set up another one and let's get it going.
All right, let's go back to some of our questions that we had here. And this is a question that came in from Neil. Neil went to internetadvisor.net and put this in through the Contact Us. It's about the Adobe Flash Player. And here's what he says. I have the latest version of Flash Player installed. But when I land on a site, it says I need to install it. Any suggestions, guys? Who wants to take this jump ball?
I got to tell you, Flash changes like the weather. I mean, every 5 minutes, they're putting out a new version of it. He may think he has the latest version. The only way to know for sure is I know on the Mac, you can go into System Preferences, click on the Flash icon, and it will go directly to Adobe's site and check and see what version of Flash you have. I think it does the same thing on Windows, but I've never used it that way.
I just go to the Adobe website and then run their, their application to download now, and it'll say it's already up to date.
You know?
And I would never download from the site that says it's not up to date, right?
Good. Yes.
You want to say, okay, great, let me go check. And like Ed said and Cal, they said go to the Adobe website, right. Check it there. I've known cases where they said, oh, your Flash program isn't up to date. I go find out that, oh, yes, I do have the most up-to-date one. That site asked if it was... that site was a version behind.
Yes.
And because I wasn't using the version they thought I should, I was using one newer, they hadn't updated.
And now that was a rather innocent kind of an experience, right. But one of the things that can be happening, and I like
sometimes they want you to download from their site, the one they direct you to, because they're going to download a different type of Adobe Player. It's not Adobe. It's their own version that might include a payload, which you don't want to put.
And that's the danger, Ed, I think, in this. So the rule of thumb is here, do not go, don't follow the link on some site that says you need to upgrade.
Absolutely not. Yep.
The other part of that rule of thumb is only upgrade from the actual manufacturer's site when in doubt.
Right. Yeah, so with Flash, the place that you would go then is?
Adobe.com.
Adobe.com. And so that's a very important
folks. Right, and if they didn't change their website, because it used to be very easy to find it at Adobe.com, now it's this itty-bitty little box in the top right, in the middle of the screen on the right-hand side, where they have a download section for their other, because Adobe makes some other products, but most of us know it as, just the media player and the Flash player.
I want to skip.
And Flash is very porous, and as Cal said, it gets updated all the time because they find vulnerabilities.
Do you say porous?
Porous.
I like that.
Ooh.
Have we found a sweet spot for
you?
It has a lot of holes in it.
Am I right that they're trying to replace Flash with
another program? Well, a lot of people have been trying.
HTML5 was supposed to do that, right?
Yes.
And if everyone would adopt HTML5, that would take care of the Flash issue and they can move on. I don't even think Adobe really wants to keep constantly updating that software themselves.
I think you may be right.
But it is there. It is what's going on. But someone embraces something different, they'll hang out.
It's the opposite end of their coin, though. It's name recognition. A lot of people don't subscribe to their cloud-based Adobe Premiere services or was it CS? I'm paying $19 a month now for my son to use that darn software for 6 months so he can have their $2,000 suite of software.
Everything that they have to offer.
Yeah.
That's true.
So that's not a bad
deal.
And
I'm going to whip it out of his hide eventually.
His first job that he gets.
I can't wait to come over to his house and go your son's been out of college 32 years. Why are you still paying for Adobe?
I want to ask you, Cal, a question that's been asked to me both through emails and just kind of in passing. If you run a Mac... Okay, you're on the iOS OS X.
Yes.
Their operating system. Should we be looking for antivirus software? Because generally speaking, most of us who run Macs don't have it. Don't run it.
Two schools of thought. One school of thought says be prepared, think ahead of the box, that sort of thing. So go ahead and put antivirus on it so that in case something happens, you got something there. Second school of thought... small market in relation to Windows. A lot of people are pointing at it. Not a lot of potential going out there, at least as far as the thieves are concerned. So it's been pretty quiet on that particular
front. I've seen some rumblings and some comments that have been made that, you better watch out because they're going to be coming after Macs, because of the popularity of...
So the way I look at it is this. You... First of all, before you even put any antivirus on any computer, good old common sense filters kick into place first.
Yeah. Nothing takes the place of that.
Just don't click willy-nilly. If something's in doubt, don't play with it. Leave it alone.
The one thing I'll say, there are more Androids out there than there are Macs.
Oh, absolutely.
So depending on what link you'll hit, I've been solicited McAfee and Norton antivirus for my phone.
Yeah, I am seeing more of that spoken about precisely because Android is, everywhere in terms of the I don't forget what it is, 80%, is it something like that?
If there's any
worldwide,
place that...
Worldwide.
I would probably say this. If you're a novice... If you're not a seasoned computer person who knows how to be savvy and be able to judge things, when in doubt, put the antivirus on it, use something like ClamX, try one of the free ones out there, do those first, and then if you're happy with that, fine. If you're not, you know, then move on to something else.
Tell me about one of our guests, Ryan Walt, has been quiet in here, but what do you use in terms of security for yourself? Now, you're an IT risk manager at a bank where, you know, you certainly need to have the best security available. What do you do on your own personal?
Yeah, personal.
Yeah, so actually, I was an MCSC, but I'm a Mac person now. So the Clam is the good product. My wife, I kind of, like, to your point, it's educating the staff or educating the people first. Like, my wife, she knows not to go on sites and questionable areas, so it's really doing that first and protecting it that way.
Now, I did get nailed, though, Cal, with a toolbar hijack with this thing called, Trovi. Trovi, I think it is. That all of a sudden, I found my start page was taken over.
Well, the tool.
I was able to go, by the way, I was able to go into the tools on Google Chrome, I think it was, and get it out as an extension. But I was amazed when it happened.
See, a toolbar hijack in my book is not the same as a virus. A toolbar hijack is more like, I want you just to look at what I got. And I mean, and there's even legitimate companies that will try to switch you over in that particular case.
But the same problem exists, which is somebody puts something on your computer that you don't want.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the point is, I think, Foster, so your Google, your Chrome browser was compromised, not the OS, even though you might have been using it on a Mac.
By the way, it was the Chrome, Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. All three were compromised by the sucker.
You know, you've been living...
It wasn't the operating system.
You've been living in bliss and in rainbow with rose-colored glasses for 8 years, Foster. It's about time you got nailed. That's all I got to say.
Thank you very much.
There he goes.
For that snarky commentary.
The gauntlet has been laid down.
There you go. We're going to be back again in just a moment to talk about some more of the questions that you sent us and see if we can find some answers for you here on the Internet Advisor. Before we wrap up this fourth segment of our program here, and we've got a question lined up, I want to thank Gary Baker for being here, along with Mr. Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and Ryan Walther from... Flagstar, thank you so much for being with us. Good to have you in the studio. And feel free, by the way, to have your family here, too. It was really neat.
Great.
We'll post a picture of that. That really was cute.
Once-in-a-lifetime chance. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Well, he'll be on many times. He's only four. Although, you know, radio, he'll... You know, people will ask him, you were on the radio? What's that? I remember reading about that in the history books.
That's true, yeah.
Well, you know, they do have internet radio, and he could have a server up in about a week and a half and run
it. At four, he'd probably have to wait till he was five to really have the money to do that. I know.
By the way, I want to remind you, Gary, the 20th anniversary of Online Tech is being celebrated on December the 2nd. For those of you who can get there, there's an open house. And simply go to onlinetech.com/open house so you can find out more information about that. We'll have that on the air.
All I can see is this poor kid crowd sharing right now.
All right, let's get to our last question on that happy note. All right, here we go. This came to us from Dale. And Dale's question, isn't it kind of an interesting one? It's had us scratching our heads and digging in ourselves to find out what happened. He says, I accidentally opened a spam. And now all I get is this AV Bytes 2015 message. Now that's capital A, capital V, B-Y-T-E-S. AV Bytes 2015 message. I ran a full scan. It took all of last night. And I deleted the things it told me to delete. I have Microsoft Security Essentials and a Dell computer running Windows 7. Do you have any advice? I try Googling AV Bytes 2015. And I can't find anything on the subject. The scan was not from AV Bytes 2015, rather Microsoft Security Essentials. For more information, AV Bytes 2015 says it comes from Microsoft.
Of course.
Does it? I'm in a quandary. What to do? Please help. Ed?
If you remember, there's a lot of bogus or trickster, the fake antivirus software out there. They try to... use similar names to the products that are already out there. So how do you root these things out? first thing I always do is perform a system restore on my computer. Windows 7, right? The user said he had a Windows.
As soon as you see it come up, right?
As soon as you have it come up, do perform a system restore. Now, you can just select your start, and then in the search bar, type in system restore, or you can go start all programs, accessories, system tools, and select the system restore application from Microsoft. Restore it to a date and time when you know you did not have this infection.
Okay.
A couple days ago, if it happened right away. A week ago, if it happened a couple days ago. So perform a system. That's the first thing I would do. Now, some of these programs, after they've been embedded for a short period of time, they will actually delete all your system restore points.
Yes.
Or they disable system restore, right. Which in essence does the same thing.
And that's one of the indications that you got a virus is when you go to system restore and it says, I'm sorry, you can't get there.
Do you have to have that turned on prior to it? I mean, or does Windows 7 automatically do restore points?
Good point.
Usually, yeah, Windows 7 and 8 come with system restore automatically enabled. Usually on corporate computers is where it's disabled. You know, like with us on General Motors environment, they disable system restore on all of our computers. For life of me, I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure there's a legal reason why.
Yeah, you know.
You know,
but for the rest of us, you should make sure if you're on a Windows platform, make sure there's a restore point.
Okay.
And a system
restore. And if that fails, the other thing I usually do, well, he didn't say Malwarebytes. He did not download and install Malwarebytes.
He just work with Microsoft Security Essentials.
Right.
So point number two then.
Point number two is try to download and install Malwarebytes. Mm-hmm. And I do that. We go into the internetadvisor.net website, go select tools.
Right.
And
on our homepage. Ed's put up links there that will get you pretty much directly to Malwarebytes. Now, when you get there, you may find out that there's a trial version of the Pro, and you may want to just decide whether you want to have that or just simply install Malwarebytes.
Right. In essence, when you're installing it, make sure you watch the screen,
yes.
Look at all the boxes where they have little click marks at, and select appropriately.
Now, or you can go to malwarebytes.org. And download it yourself. Yep. I have a third item, but Ryan, I'm interested to see what your third step might be.
Yeah, so I was actually just looking up a quick site that we've used in the past, and sometimes if you don't know if it's a vulnerability, there's a website, and I'll read it off to you. It's web.nvd.nist.gov.
Wait, web dot?
NVD.
NVD.
Dot NIST.
Dot NIST.
Dot gov.
Dot gov. Okay, I'm going to post this online as well, by the way. So it's...
Don't give away our secrets.
It's web, W-E-B, dot N, Nancy, Victor, David, N-V-D, dot N-I-S-T, dot G-O-V.
Dot okay. M-O-U-S-E. Okay.
And what the acronyms stand for is basically this is the National Vulnerability Database and by the National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's a government site. And this allows you to actually search common vulnerabilities that are in here. So you can
excellent.
Go, if you're looking for this, you can go to AVBytes, do a search in there, and it'll tell you what it is, what it could be, and how to fix it. Also, if you do a scan, you do get the results. Usually the results come with what's called a CVE score. It's a common vulnerability, and I can't remember what the E stands for, but it's a score rating along with a reference number that allows you to look that reference number up, and it tells you what people are doing to actually fix that issue.
Ooh, excellent. Now, where would I find that CVE rating?
It's usually at the results of like a malware scan, or if you're running a scanning product trying to find vulnerabilities, it'll give you the summary, and then it'll also give you
the CVE score?
The CVE score and then reference numbers to try to point you in the right direction. Usually there's hyperlinks to fixes if it's a product or whatnot, but I always go to this site and do a search and see what it says.
I love this other resource. That's an excellent resource. Now, Ed, you had something else that you were going to suggest in terms of dealing with it.
Yes. The third thing I want to do is with any program that pops up and manifests on your computer, usually it shows up as a resource as an application that's currently running. So I always bring up Task Manager.
Okay.
Control-Alt-Delete, bring up Task Manager. And in the many of us have always gone into processes and looked at all those and services. But if it's a pop-up window, it also will show up underneath an application like Microsoft Word or Internet Explorer. This is an active application that has a dialog box or a window that's present. So what I do is Control-Alt-Delete, you find that pop-up from this AV, whatever the name of the malicious program is,
AV Bytes.
And then you right-mouse click on it, and you select Go to Service, and that'll take you to the next tab. And then from that tab, it'll have it highlighted, the actual program or the executable name. You right-mouse click on that, and you say Open Folder. So, and then it'll tell you where it is on your hard drive. More than likely, it's in a temporary internet files folder. And then at which point you can just say delete or make a mental note or write down the note where that is. You can reboot your computer in safe mode or use a bootable flash drive or a live CD. And then you can go into that folder and delete that rascal out that way. Wow. That way it prevents it from coming up. Or you can, you know, empty your Tapper and
folks,
internet files.
This is the time
this
when
is
you,
technique.
Want to, you want to download the podcast, because we're not going to go through all those steps again. But if you download the podcast, and we usually separate out the second hour, go to somewhere near the end of the second hour, and you'll be able to listen to this entire formula that Ed just had. Ed, you want to say
and one? And the only way they're listening to this is if they downloaded the webcast.
There you go.
Wow.
Pardon me. Duh. Excuse me. I'm so used to doing the live show as well. Duh. Cal.
I just spin my chair 180 degrees and continue to use my Mac with no problem.
Now, why don't you save a little snark for him, huh? He dumps all the snark on me. Ryan, I want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's
that
great.
Last gem that you gave us, I think, is probably one of the best things that's happened to us on this show today. A great present, early Christmas present to us, because it's a great way to look for that. Eddie, thank you for those steps. Guys, thanks so much for being with us today. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Ryan Walther. Glad to have all of you aboard. And folks, thank you very much again for joining us. As Gary said, you're already listening to the podcast, so you know where to go for it. If you have a question for us, though, simply go to internetadvisor.net and then click on the Contact Us button. There you can leave your question for us. And as you heard today, we take care of answering these questions during the week. And sometimes when we're pre-recorded, as we are today, because we were preempted by MSU football, we're more than happy to tackle the questions and even sometimes to invite you back to be on the air with us as we try to solve the problems. Have a great week. See you soon.